You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey, thanks for hitting play. Welcome to The Come Up. My name is Matt, and on this episode, a conversation with James T. Lane. Before we dive in, I think it's important for me to tell you that we do cover a few topics that people might be sensitive to, mostly centered around addiction with drugs and alcohol. James's story is compelling, and I'm going to let him tell it. And it inspired a conversation about creating space for grace, showing up when it's hard, letting go of perfection, the divine nature of creativity, and much more. We recorded this in early February of 2023 while James was playing Billy Flynn in the Broadway revival of Chicago. And I should add, if you haven't seen this production of Chicago, which I had not, it really is musical theater gold. There's a reason it's still running 26 years later. For context, before we hit record, James and I were talking about his time with Ain't Too Proud, the Temptations musical, on the road with my dear friend, Reed Campbell. I also wanted to quickly mention how excited I am that this is the 10th episode of the second season of this show. I really only plan on making 8 episodes this time around, but these conversations have been filling me up in a way that I didn't expect, and I'm just thankful that I've had the opportunity to do this. And I'm grateful that I get to share stories like this one. So without further ado, here is the saintly song and dance man, James T. Lane. But that wasn't your first time on the road.
My first road show was the European Tour of Fame, and I was like 19 years old, so.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Had you been overseas before?
No, this was, you know, Black boys from South Philly projects in Zurich, Switzerland in 19. Then we went to Berlin, Germany, and then we were in Paris, France for a while. We were in Austria for a while. And so it was mind blowing. And, you know, I think that if given the opportunity, a young person should really travel, because you do not know until you've experienced what the world is, you know, what the world can be, and who you are. And, you know, you're such a small little, deep, you know, bright light, but small in this big, huge, gigantic, diverse world. And I began to experience all of that. Yeah.
I feel like it's necessary contrast to be able to like see the world around you and see yourself as a part of it. That feels like important, like you said, for a young person to kind of have that, get that perspective of knowing that, you know, like you said, you are a bright light, but you're a speck in the sort of global landscape.
Yeah. One of the many lights, you know, and as a Black American, a Black gay American, you know, you just really, you unlearn a lot. You unlearn a lot. You appreciate more. You know, I remember those things that you hear in elementary school, you know, it bashes a lot of the myths that we as Americans tell ourselves, you know, number one and this and that. And then you know, you can be great, but there are many great and diverse things out there. And that's what I really got to participate in. You know, it's like, oh yeah, that's right. There's a whole other thing going on over here, and they're doing their thing and they're loving it just the way that we are.
Right. Right. We're just here. We're just imports.
Right.
For a moment.
Right. 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 On, you know, Kurfürstendamm in Berlin, they're living their lives too.
Right. You know? Wait, and so, what's the story? You got injured after that tour, or on that tour?
I came back to America and did the national tour of fame, and that's where I got injured. Yeah. Yeah. Devastating. 22 years old. Just hitting my stride, you know, as a dancer, particularly, you know, I mean, just when you're, you know, really cinching it in. But I thought I was Superman. You know, I would warm up, but like, I was like, I'm fine, doing some jumping jacks, you know, and then my Achilles tendon went, and I knew, something had happened earlier in the week where I felt a little twinge. And I thought, like, something's going on here, but I'll push through. I'll make it through. And then Saturday night, I went to stage manager and I said, I don't think I should do the show Sunday. And this is in no way blaming this guy for anything. Just so we're clear.
Well, it was a cultural thing too at the time. I mean, we're just now getting to the point of like, if you're not feeling okay, you should probably call out, right? We've lived in the show must go on for eternity, basically.
Right. You know, and he said what he said, and I woke up basically, you know, see how you feel in the morning. And you know, I woke up in the morning and I was like, well, I feel fine. I'll go to the gym, I'll warm up, I'll do all the things. And then, you know, in my big number, it couldn't have been more dramatic. It could not have been more dramatic. The last the dancers are going right and left and everybody's doing their tricks, right? Everybody's doing their tricks. And Tyrone Jackson, he's the last trick, right? And I go up and I do a switch second and I go and take off and my Achilles is. And I thought the set fell behind me. That's how loud it is. I thought the set fell.
That's how loud the snap was in your...
Yeah, it sounds like a softball hitting a glove.
Like, oh, God.
And I didn't even... I kind of looked behind me as I'm tumbling. Now, I'm trying... This is... I'm the only one on stage because everybody has done their trick and left. I'm doing my last trick and the lights go boom, boom, boom. And I'm in a spot on the ground and I'm literally in a spot on the ground because I've fallen and then I go into kind of a shock.
Yeah.
And then I try to get up and then I finally put all my weight onto my left foot and go off stage left and collapse and cry. And that's, it was a terrible way to begin a journey that has changed the course of my life for the better.
Yeah, tell me about that.
You know, so it was like, hey, you're not Superman, right? Like things happen.
That humbling happens. Yeah, right.
That humbling thing, it can happen to you also. You're not made of steel. And that was in March of 2000 when it happened. And then you know, so I had a lot of time on my hands and, you know, I come from the inner city, South Philly, you know, drugs and drinking were, you know, around. I never did anything like that. I think I had like a few drinks even in college before I left to go on tour, not a drinker or a drugger user or any type of substances. It just wasn't on my radar.
Yeah.
At all, really. You know, I'd had a drink or something, but nothing serious, but I had a lot of time on my hands and you know, it was Gay Pride in June of 2000. And I thought, like, well, I'd never been to Gay Pride or anything like that. And then I was like, somebody was like, hey, you know, have you ever tried this, ecstasy? And I was like, no, I've never had the time, frankly. And I did. And, you know, that feeling of what that drug, you know, allows you to feel and turns on, I just never wanted to turn it on.
Yeah.
It was like a relief that it was like soul relief, or like I didn't even know I was carrying the shit I was carrying and it was gone. And I was like,
ecstasy will do that to you. Yeah. That's, yeah. That's why it is called ecstasy.
Right. And I said to myself, I never want to not feel like this, you know? And like, you know, I proceeded for the next 4.5 years to just dismantle everything that I had worked for up to that point. All the relationships that I built professionally, and then all the relationships that I built personally or grew up with, I destroyed with addiction. You know, what was first in my life, which were the arts, and you know, got me out of, you know, the projects. Frankly, I was willing to throw it all away to feel that feeling all the time.
Yeah.
And so I forfeited a life of, you know, that I had built with a lot of help. And, you know, finally in 2004, the last kind of thing to go was like, or to you know, that was knocking on my door was like my sanity. Like I was like not, the best way I describe it is like, you know, being stuck on an elevator in between floors. Mm. Like you're not exactly here, but you're not exactly there.
Yeah.
You know, and like, you know, people who knew me for years would walk right by me on the street. That hurt a lot. You know, you were like, it's me, it's James. And they're like, I don't know who you are. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I was so unrecognizable, like in my eyes, they couldn't see me. And it was like the last stop on the train. Like you're all the way at Coney Island. And like there's no,
there's,
you know,
nowhere
like,
else to go.
There's
yeah.
nowhere else to go. And finally, you know, I made a decision, you know, with a lot of help. And I've been on that journey ever since.
Did someone invite you into those rooms? Like how did that come about?
Well, you know, I had I'd moved to New York City and I'd been going into places and stuff like that, but it never stuck. And then finally I went to, you know, in a crack house, there's a lot of talk about recovery. There's a lot of talk about recovery in a crack house.
Isn't that interesting?
It's really true. Oh, you can go to this outpatient or that outpatient or this program, you know, but you know, cause it's a, you know, I'm sure people, I mean, you know, and people, it starts out as fun. Like it starts out as a good time.
Of course.
But it's a fucking drag. Like yeah. It's not fun.
No.
You know, and so a lot of people want to find another way. And, you know, the miracle is that some of us do find it, right?
Yeah.
And so somebody was talking about this place called The Wedge in Philadelphia on Broad Street. And I had called the cops on myself because I was going crazy. And they put me in like a locked ward and I got health insurance when I was there. And then somebody was talking about The Wedge. And after a particularly stressful weekend, I went to The Wedge and I had health insurance and they let me in. And so I would go Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And then I drank and used drugs on the weekends, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then finally it stuck where somebody was talking about fear and shame and guilt in the program. And I didn't just like, shut up. Don't be talking about
I don't want to talk about the real shit. Right.
So but it gave me permission to talk about my fear and my shame and guilt. And I didn't want to be black. I didn't want to be gay. Mm. And I definitely didn't want to be an addict. And I started talking about those very things. And I will say this, it's not like I inherently didn't want to be those things or rejected those things inside of me. I just thought the chip on my shoulder that was released with that ecstasy was a lot about all of those things in society, right?
Right. Like, I think a lot of people find that the whatever the thing that you're addicted to is, it isn't the problem, it's the solution.
It's the solution.
Right? We're using that as the solution to whatever the problem is.
Right. Right.
And then when you lose that solution, when you have to give up that solution, you have to find another one.
You've got to find another way. And you know, you graduate, you know, you try to find another way through other things, through other drugs and stuff.
Of course.
And then finally,
people.
Right. And finally, you're at Coney Island. And Coney Island's a wonderful place.
Yes, right. No shade to Coney Island, right.
No
yeah.
shade to Coney Island. But the Coney Island of addiction. And then finally, you get some help in terms of like somebody who's traveled that way out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you hold onto their hand and they lead you out, you know. And I remember a big thing. I was like, you know, going to, I thought everybody was talking about me. Just paranoid, like I'm the first thing on their mind.
Uh-huh,
right?
Yeah, right. Everybody's worried about you.
Everybody's worried about me, talking about me. Nobody is talking about you, James.
Nope. Everybody's trying to deal with their own shit.
No. Yeah. So he started talking about that, and then it allowed me to talk about those things that I had such chips on my shoulder because I didn't think I had a chip on my shoulder, but. You know, I have a pleasant disposition. I just naturally do. that's always been, it's not a mask or anything. It's just, I'm light in that way.
Yeah.
But you can be light in that way and still have a chip on your shoulder or be sensitive about things that drive you a little mad inside. And I started talking about all of those things and I still talk about those things. You know, I mean, I've been, you know, free of drugs and alcohol for over 18 years, you know,
what a miracle, truly a miracle.
And thank you. It just keeps getting better. Thank God. It just keeps, you know, getting more and more and more. I mean, you know, it's not a bed of roses, but, you know,
no,
looking
certainly
for the next one.
Yeah, right. It's and one of the things that I've heard a lot is that, like, you know, it grows too. So there is no graduation. There is no moment where it's like, oh, I've taken the test and I'm done and I'm good to go and now I'm set. It certainly alleviates over time, but you have to continue to do the work. You have to continue to speak it into, like, and to say it out loud, right? We have to, like, free ourselves of it by saying it out loud and talking about it. And allowing, again, for another solution to come in, and, you know, accepting that there's something greater at work here that wants you to succeed, that wants to love you, you just need to be an expression of that. But that's hard.
It's hard. It's hard to get back down to, like a big thing that I would share with the guys, the temps on tour, is like, you know, it's like when I'm going spinning, you know, I just wiggle my feet and my feet are connected to the ground. And it's just like, oh, right, I'm here right now. This is be where my feet are.
Yeah.
You know, like that's, you know, and I am in the care. Like there's something greater than me that has a greater idea of what's going on in my life, you know, because for right now, I mean, there's some things that I'm, you know, I can tie my shoelaces today, but like, you know, there are bigger things that are going on and I don't have the larger picture. So I need some help.
You know, and I found, and I'm really curious to hear your perspective on this, like that awareness of something greater and allowing the grace of something other than you to be in control, which is, again, simple, but not easy, is what they say. For people in this industry, for creative people in an industry that is so out of our control, it is so much not about us. That is really powerful medicine. Again, simple, but not easy. But I find, and I'm still finding that, like, you know, having a hand my life over is hard, but it's like every single little decision, you know, every room that you walk into, every audition that you get, like, you have to allow that grace in those spaces too.
My favorite thing is when I'm going into a room or even going onto the stage, I just say, God, meet me there. Meet me there on that stage, you know, just meet me there so that, you know, space for the grace, right?
Yes.
You know, space for the grace, you know, because I don't know. I'm not a fortune teller. All I can do is prepare, but I want to be as open as possible for the magic that happens
right
there, you know, and that's why preparation is so good for me so that there's space for whatever magic to happen. You know, so but being prepared allows that. If I'm holding on to those sides in the room, there's no space for me.
There's no space, you know, right?
You know, I'm all up in that. You know, you know, so yeah.
That's really. I've never thought about it in that way or heard it in that way. That the preparation is sort of like laying the foundation for that magic to take place. And I don't know if this is true for you, but like, it feels like that's a big part of the reason why I got interested in the arts in the first place was because of the magic that I felt either witnessing something for the first time, you know, being swept away by something that I saw or was like, wow, I'm a part of something bigger than myself in this particular moment. And then being in a show for the first time and feeling that feeling of like having something come over you and just getting to travel on whatever that roller coaster is and being a part of a company of people, or being in a room and watching magic happen in a rehearsal room, you know, that to personify that as grace or to label that as grace, you know, is to me, it that feels accurate. I identify with that. That makes a lot of sense to me. And I've never quite attached those two things that I think that, again, is like why I fell in love with the arts in the first place.
And, you know, and if grace like hits a person like in like a weird way, like grace, oh no, you know, it could be connection or relationship. You know, like those are really, you know, words that you can personify, you know, like that we're all connected or we're in relationship with each other.
Yeah.
And that relationship extends beyond us,
yeah.
You know, which is wonderful. But discipline, you talked about discipline. My friend Harris Turner, who's a swinging MJ, he posted the other day, you know, which I agree with, but like discipline, oh, he has a tattoo, I believe. It's like discipline is freedom. You know, which is which takes it back to preparation, because like being consistent or practicing a discipline, it allows like in the moment you got it. It's discipline. Then this is the perfect example. Sunday matinee and Sunday evening shows, baby. I love the people that come, but like, honey,
yeah,
like, baby.
Yeah, you really gotta know every move,
baby, because and that's where discipline and preparation comes in, or those pliés or those jumps or those scales. We tired, but if you have practiced, if you have discipline, then you know it's not, you know, you will get into that plié. You will. You know, it's like a default setting so that you can just really be present because, you know, you don't have that opening night thing, you know, to just keep you on your toes.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a real freedom to be consistent and practiced and prepared and disciplined, you know? Yeah.
It like, again, I think so much of the recovery stuff is just so helpful. And I wish every artist had to go through some form of recovery, because it really is so powerful, and it really contextualizes, I think, so much of what we do. And sure, I agree with you. Like, if grace is a weird word or God is a weird word, which I think a lot of people feel an aversion to, had a big aversion to, call it generosity, call it love, call it the universe, call it the sun, you know, you call it air. Like, you can literally call it whatever you want, use any name you want, but that feeling, those expressions of love, patience,
work for you,
work, whatever works, you know, that is what, to me, that's what that is it's all an expression of that thing that we're trying to get back to, right? That is like what I feel when I go see, you know, a beautiful piece of theater. I mean, I will say, like, that is what is going on at Chicago right now. It is a big old love fest in that room.
We're having a good time.
It really, and you can tell everyone's having like a really, really, really good time. And I had never seen the production before. And I was so, we ended up watching the movie this weekend because I was like, I love this show. This show is so good. And I think that's why the production is so good, is because it sort of gets everything out of the way. We don't need the big set pieces. We don't need the big drops and all the lighting. It is like, hear the text, watch these people exist, and hear this unbelievable music, and let that just exist as it is. It doesn't need all the other stuff. And again, like it, to me, it was like you get to see the love kind of pour through the piece, because there's nothing in the way, you know?
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, it's not unlike, you know, the Ain't Too Proud that I just came from in terms of the music. you can't go wrong. Like, it's right. You know, the music of Ain't Too Proud was just wonderful. That the Temptations songbook is fantastic. Motown songbook. But the Candor and I mean, you know, they were like disruptors in their own time in terms of like what the music is and the stories they were trying to tell. You know, they liked stories that are a little just off or turn the mirror to the audience, you know, and it was like this play is like about that celebrity crime culture that people love to hate to love,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they lean in and, you know, and when it was originally produced in 1975, the musical, it was ahead of its time. And then, interestingly enough, in 1996, it was the start of the OJ stuff as well. You know,
connected those two before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think OJ happened a lot right before that or something like that. And then this was there. And it's kind of that celebrity crime was back in, you know, we were watching, you know, courtroom stuff. Judge Ito in the you know, so all of that stuff was back in vogue. And but back to what you said about the show and the love fest and like no facade, you know, it's just about the words. It's just about the craft of musical theater, mm-hmm. you know, and the style, you know, about Fosse's style, but also the storytelling of the vaudeville show. You know,
which is brilliant. Oh, it's brilliant in the way that it's crafted.
It's so great. It's so great. And you know, those folks, you know, they were doing a week of encore shows.
I know, which is yeah, I know, which is just that's. I was thinking about that too. That I've been talking about this a lot because obviously, you know, we had Into the Woods come in, and now Parade is coming in, and there is something about this particular form or this particular, I don't know what the word is, like vehicle, the way that it's structured, that it just works, especially when, I think when the piece is good enough, when the piece is strong enough that it's just about the text and the music and the story and the rest of it falls away, we don't need anything else. And you said, they were just doing a week of encores production. It wasn't meant to be this like 25-year run of a musical, but.
Right. Good theater. You know, like that's why A Chorus Line worked. Story, music, you know, the Scottsboro Boys, we just ran around and did some chairs, you know, like, and it's just story, theater, music, you know, we love to see ourselves. Humanity loves to see ourselves. The clearer that we can see ourselves, the deeper it gets in, I believe. Mm. You know, we like all the other stuff, but we love when we really get to the humanity of it.
Yeah.
And that's what Chicago does. You know, that's what those great shows that don't have a lot of other stuff going on, what we clue into. And I love theater like that. Like, I love you know, creating in the space, like, and the audience gets to use their imagination, you know, a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And it's storytelling, you know, which is as old as time. Like, that's what theater is.
Right.
Storytelling.
I mean, I was thinking, like, I cannot believe the Cell Block Tango was ever done in another way. Like that, like to me, like that is what it was meant to be. Is like these six girls just like living their lives on chairs, just like giving. It's so, and you get, and again, like you're just watching people like really work, right? It's like the purest form of musical theater. It's like you're really watching. I mean, like Charlotte's Roxy monologue was transcendent. Like I have never seen that piece done that way. And I was like, Oh my God. Like this is what this is.
Yeah. As I was talking to Charlotte just yesterday and we were talking about this show being an opportunity to do craft like it was done a long time ago. Mm. Like you, as a performer, you want shows that, you know, the convention of the show is that, but you want to be able to really sink your teeth into something that that feels good to you and is really conveying to the audience, you know, who you are as well as who the character is. And Chicago gives you that. We literally backstage we were talking about craft and what this show gives a performer, you know. As a Black man, you know, playing Billy Flynn, I'd get to do things that I dreamed about when I was young, holding the audience in the palm of my hands, driving the show, like where, you know, it, with good music and good writing, yeah. All of that. It's like I get to sink my teeth into these monologues, and I'm not just a sliver in a story. I'm giving you a full character, which is rare.
Yeah, and it feels like, and I'm curious to know what you think of this. Like, it feels like there's no excess in that show. It is word for word, beat for beat. Like, nothing is frills. It is everything right. Is very specific in the sense that, like, there's not one letter wasted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's mm-hmm. like everything we're gonna like, as we now say, we walked out of there, we were like, there are no crumbs left. You guys are eating it up there, like,
I love that.
Just like, you know what I mean, like, left yeah. no crumbs, truly.
Yeah.
And with a good piece, you can do that, you know. With a good piece, you can really, really do that, you know. You feel that, I think, and maybe it's just because we're theater people, but like, as an audience member, I am paying attention to that kind of thing, right? And okay. Let me say also, it is no surprise to me why it's run for so long and has connected with such a wide audience, because for a piece to run that long, it can't just be the New York theater going audience to come see it.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
It's tourism. Like, that is yeah. a tourist attraction. But it's no surprise uh-huh. why it is, because it really uh-huh. is musical theater.
Yeah.
American yeah, musical theater.
American musical theater, you know, and that connects the world, you know. You can watch it in whatever language you come from, and you're yeah. getting it. Yeah.
And that's why I'm guessing why people continue to come back in terms of the actors, like why mm-hmm. some of these company members have been there almost the entire time.
Oh yeah. I mean, my friend Donna Marie, she just left. She did 20 years on Broadway, but you know, Shauna Demoise was the first Roxy to take it out on the road, and you know, and she, I think she's come back over 22 times, You know, and, you know, I was off and on in the ensemble for 10 years, you know, and then when I left in 2018, I said, you know, I left, my focus was on, I need more creative responsibility. Mm. And so I left in search of what that meant to me. Mm. And I knew that, like, because it's a family, Chicago's a family, when I came back, if they gave me the opportunity, I'd love to come back as Billy Flynn. And that's what I said to myself and to anyone who would listen, you know, that's what I said,
and you manifested it.
That's right, baby. That's right. You know, a day at a time.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Yeah, so tell me about the unfolding of all of this life that you've had.
My first Broadway show was A Chorus Line. Played Richie in A Chorus Line, and I remember the first photo shoot of the line. You know, we're actually turned at sad backs. It's mm-hmm. red, and I remember calling my mother from the photo shoot because I had I'd just had a year or free of drugs and alcohol, and said like a little cookie belly and a little cookie butt. And I was with like, you know, Michael Burress and Tyler Haynes and Tony Yazbek. I was like, you know, Broadway.
Yeah, right.
I was feeling very sensitive. And I called my mother from the photo shoot in like a corner. And I was like, Mom, I'm feeling very insecure about how I look and feel. And she said to me, Black mothers will get you together. She said, remember you were smoking that crack and you were half of yourself? Think about that. Click, click.
Click, click.
Got like, me
right,
together.
Right. Yeah, you're like, right. Right, 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 right.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Got it. You know, so, you know, like I said, it hasn't been easy, but showing up even when it's hard has been the thing that I've had to do consistently to get to the other side of things. You know, breaking up with partners, finding out what it feels like to be, you know, renting an apartment in New York City, you know, never done anything like that before. Not having a Broadway show while living in New York City. That's a whole feeling, and feeling like less than. Who am I? Who am I without a Broadway show? And coming to understand that I'm perhaps there's more. So I started doing all the symphony work, you know, that came out of the blue. You know, somebody had remembered me from Philadelphia and said, we need a song and dance guy. And then I was working at the Indianapolis Symphony with the Pops. Mm. And that led to my debut at Carnegie Hall. You know, so all of a sudden, you know, there was this other arm of what I do. And I come from great teachers in Philadelphia. So I always taught master classes, and then I started my own dance class for singers and actors that I still teach, so that feeds me in a very particular way, all the while doing my thing for, you know, to stay clear of drugs and alcohol. But a very significant thing was when I'm, you know, working over on the West End, you know, it was weird how it happened too, because I was on tour with Jersey Boys. And I got a call from Bjork Lee asking me to do A Chorus Line over on the West End. And I was like, great. She's like, oh, I was like, when is it? And she said, oh, it'll be starting in January of 2013. And I was like, great. And that was like, it was like November 2012. It was like starting. Like,
mm-hmm.
And then I got a call saying that the Scottsboro Boys was going to the West End in the same year. And I was like, mm-hmm. I guess I'm supposed to be over there. You know, like. And so I went over there, and I was over there from 2013 through 2015. I came home for about five or six months. But 2015, in February, we came home. But I got a commission from the Young Vic in London to start writing. And so I began to write, and I had never written before. And I was writing about this and that, and then I started writing stories about being out there. And getting the next one. And, you know, David Land, the artistic director at the time, you know, just was like, that's you? I don't even see that person. And I said, yeah, it's remarkable to me even. And so I just continued to write. And, you know, after 8 years, we finally got to a production in 2021 down at Designers American Dream Theater in Virginia Beach. Mm. And it's called Triple Threat. And there is more to come about Triple Threat. So, you know, I
unexpected
can't give too
blessings.
Much away.
Unexpected blessings.
But unexpected blessings. Yes. Yes. Very much so.
And again, it sounds like it's all kind of been not unexpected, but it's been, again, like showing up when it's hard and just showing up, but showing up with mm-hmm. grace and with kindness and with generosity, and continuing to just give, you know, be prepared and allow whatever will come to come.
Yeah, doing the next right thing, like not shying away from the next right thing to do, you know. And you know, sometimes that's easier than others.
Definitely.
But you know, putting on your boots and getting out there.
Yeah.
You know, and seeing what happens. And you know, yesterday is funny because I just, you know, before the show, after the Sunday, it's like, because our days are off on Wednesdays.
I was going to say, so do you do five show weekends and then you do two more?
Yes.
Oh my God.
It's hard. But so, yesterday's show, I was like, whoosh, I don't know, y'all. You know, like I was in that dressing room like, okay, oof.
We're going to do this.
Right. But you know, I talk about how I feel. I get connected to some folks that love me and can encourage me. And then I let it go and just, you know, set a course for the evening. And my course was like, have the most wonderful time. What a blessing to be doing what you love to do. Try new things in terms of like your presence and your attitude. Don't hold back. Just have a good time because you have whatever you need. I have whatever I need for this evening. You know, I do, you know, and let go of the perfection. You know, like you're not going to sound like you did yesterday. Nobody does.
Nobody.
It's a new day. It's a new day. You know, so find the new. And I had a wonderful time last night. And, you know, and it's just, you know, our head can tell us one thing, but once again, we are in the care of something far greater, you know.
I cannot trust my thoughts anymore, right? Like, I now know that this, my head, this is an unreliable narrator. This does not know right from wrong. It does not know up from down. If I can close my eyes and breathe and feel my feet on the ground and just get present to whatever that moment is. Like you said, I'm like, I have everything that I need in this moment right now. Again, simple, but not easy. Simple, but not easy. And it's just such powerful medicine for people, especially in this industry, because it can be brutal and it can be daunting. And especially when you're not working too, when you're not working and you don't have the quote unquote thing that you think defines you, you know, that makes you whole, that completes you. How do you find wholeness and the care of something greater when it feels empty? You know, it feels like just question marks constantly. It's hard.
Yes, it is hard. Yeah, when you don't have the thing that you want the most, you know, and it's who am I without that thing, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
But it's necessary to find that. I mean, it's necessary to like that. That space. It's coming back to the thing we're talking about at the beginning of contrast. Like, you have to have that and that space in order to then feel the other thing when it comes through, right? But it takes time and it takes patience to allow for whatever is going to come into that space to be there.
and to, you know, and I've had this conversation with a lot of people about redefining who you think you are when you don't have the thing that you think defines you.
Yeah, that's the work. That's the work.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what's funny, in pursuing what or redefining that, when you get set on that's your thing, other things start coming in. Like you're like, whoa. That's life, you know. That's the way it happens. When you get clear that you've charted a course.
Yeah.
Of what you're doing, then you know, like with the it's like, you know, then that's God shall get, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, God bless the child that's got his own. You know, when you've got your own idea or set your course, then the things start to meet that. Like the universe is like, oh, I like that over there. I'm gonna go be with that, whatever that energy is, because that it's popping over there.
It's abundance. When you come from a space of abundance, and that's your energy, right? You're not when you come from a space of lack, I guess this is probably like more clear. When you're in a space of lack and you're like, I don't have, the universe is going to continue to give you, you don't have.
Right.
If you can show up even when you don't have, if you can show up that day and say, you know what? I'm talking to James today. I'm going, the sun is out today. Like my dog is laying right next to me. I have water and a roof over my head and I'm on this comfortable blanket behind me. If I can get into that space and feel the abundance there, that's where the universe, God, whatever you want to call it, will meet me, you know?
Uh-huh.
Like that's the energy that I'm then going to be met with. But that's on me.
Yes. Getting in touch with that feeling.
It feels very inherently connected to creativity in the sense that, like, I don't know how what your perspective on, you know, creativity is, but to me, it feels very divine.
Absolutely. We have come from the great creator. We're here to create. So, you know, the simplest form of creation or I don't know, it's like, you know, man and wife get together and create children. Like let's, you know, or whatever you have, you know, and, but, you know, I'm a gay man. So like, I can't really, you know, do that, but I can create a life and a family in a way that is creating that for me, if I choose to do so. So creating, you know, we can take that definition and bust it wide open. But in addition to that, I have chosen the vocation as an artist, or it has chosen me. So my vocation is creation. So I want to do that. I think a lot of problem or a lot of uncomfortability is when a creator or creative person or an artist stops creating. It can be very, very frustrating.
Yeah.
Very, very frustrating. And, you know, the I think as an artist, you know, we literally, you know, that's what we're here to do. And, you know, that's why I set out from Chicago that time ago for more creative responsibility. It's like, put me in, coach, you know, like send me, like, because I want the job. I want the responsibility.
Mm.
I want to be in that space where I am of service in this way that is so deeply, deeply, you know, inside of me.
Yeah.
Like I want to be in that creative space, you know, and serve, you know,
and reflect. And it has manifested.
Absolutely. You know, and continues to, you know, as I pour into it. You know, like it's, you know, I'm out of, you know, and staying open and doing the work to stay open.
Right.
So that it continues to, you know, in the many vessels that it can come through, this particular prism comes through as Triple Threat, comes through as my particular version of Billy Flynn tonight.
Right.
You know, it's funny, I'll share this with you. So the first couple of shows, I know Jinx is knocking it off the charts, you know, in terms of audience and it, And the first couple of shows, I was kind of sneaking out. I'd put on my hat and go because I thought everybody was there to see Jinx. And then I was also afraid that, like, nobody would want my autograph, right? Mm. So I think it was on a Thursday because we started on Monday. And on Thursday, I said, you know what? Let me get my little marker out. Let me take off my hat. Let myself be seen.
Yeah.
Let myself be seen. I don't know what this is about, but let myself be seen and just see what happens. Well, don't you know that there were people that talked about the Scottsboro Boys, a Chorus Line. There were little black boys that were seeing me play Billy Flynn, dancers who wanted to be more than just that. And I said, you know, who am I?
You took the words out of my mouth. Who are you?
Who am I?
To deny them.
To stand in the way of what God has prepared for me to do. It's more about God's applause or God's recognition and where God has brought me from than me getting a feeling about that. It's where I have been placed.
It's being of service. Yes.
Service. And it's funny. And here's the thing. And this is, we were talking about this earlier, about getting through to the other side and like, you know, being consistent about it. If I had not done that, I would never have learned that particular lesson. Like that lesson came to me after I shored up myself and said, whatever's going to happen is going to happen, but I need to do this. And not until I was on the train going home did that thought come. Like, who are you, boo-boo? Like, it, you know, like be of service.
And it's interesting because, and I want to point this out because I think you'll totally understand this. It was actually, it can be misconstrued, and I'm not misconstruing it because I fully understand. It can be misconstrued as, you know what, I'm ready to go get my praise out of the stage door. But in actuality, you not doing that was more of your ego at play than you going out and saying, let me be of service in this way. Let me just allow whatever to come will come. It has really nothing to do with me. It's not about me. It's about the path that I've been on, the path that God has put me on. And now in this moment, this particular person is coming to this moment with me from wherever they are.
Right. So profound for me. Profound for me. And I just was like, the lessons just keep on coming.
That's powerful. That's
very
really
powerful.
Yeah. Wow. Mm.
Yeah.
but took getting your ego out of the way.
And that takes courage.
Certainly.
That's the thing. Like, did you see the movie It? The new recent one, or like the not It Too, or like the recent batch.
Yeah.
When they start at the end, when they started like shouting things at him, and he was like, yes, he was like
shrinking,
diminishing,
right?
And I was just like, you know, facing your fears, whatever you're searching is on the other side of that fear. Whatever you're looking for, that fear that's knocking on your door, that's kicking your ass, it's on the other side of that boo.
Yeah. But it's hard, I think, also to identify what that fear is a lot of the time.
That's it. And I feel like developing a vocabulary, reading, like all of these things that are teaching you, it gives you the kind of language to start talking about it. Like when I was sitting in that group, like when he was talking about fear and shame and guilt, I didn't know that it was those things. Like until he started talking about it. And I was like, oh, that's shame? That's guilt? Oh my goodness. Like,
that language is powerful. Yeah.
Right. You attach the language to the feeling, and then you can express it or chat about it, you know, and then, you know, once it's out there, you know, you can decide to do something about it.
What books have been helpful in your journey? I'm curious.
Oh goodness. Like the Four Agreements. I read Conversations with God was a big one.
Mm-hmm.
The Artist's Way. Like I did that whole workbook, you know, recently. I did that during the pandemic. Lots of audio books, W.E.B. Du Bois, documentaries.
Yeah.
Right now I'm watching the 1619 Project. That's on Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
Oh goodness. When I first got, you know, in 2005, I read the Bible all the way through.
Wow.
Just because
you're like, I just want to know.
I just want to know.
Right.
Like, I want to have read the Bible from top to bottom, you know, so that I can, you know, when people come with some shit, I'm like, no. Actually, then, you know, like, I don't buy that. But here's the thing. Knowledge is power, because you know when people are bullshitting you.
Mm-hmm.
You really know when people aren't saying shit.
Mm-hmm.
That they don't, or they're talking about shit that they don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, like, say something about it. There's a lot of stuff that, like, I just let go because it's not worth my time. Because they haven't read. Or they don't know. You know,
Grace. That's grace. Grace. You're like, I don't need to be the one. I don't need to be... That is not an expression of love. I don't need to be one.
Right. You know, it's funny. And it just reminds me of, I don't know how this is related, but I'm going to share this. So I was going into the subway yesterday, and there was a young woman with her child. And there was, you know, pigeons kind of getting into the subway. And this little baby was trying to kick this pigeon. And I kept like... standing in front of the baby and the pigeon, you know, like I would like go here and go there. And finally, you know, the woman got it together. And I was just like, how many times has she been kicking pigeons?
That you didn't notice.
Right. And I was just like, you know, and I just like, you know, yes, it's language and what we're telling our children, but it's also behavior. You know, like what are we not doing? What are we allowing?
Mm.
Who are we raising these? You know, as a teacher, you know, and then working with young people, we want young people to be loving and caring, you know, so that they can grow up to be loving and caring,
right?
You know, and have a worldview instead of a, you know, very, very, very small view, you know? So I don't know what that has to do with anything, but just about
no,
like sharing
no,
that
I,
with you.
My sort of connective thread is obviously one, you know, you certainly appreciate the God-given grace of all of God's creatures. We know. So that's sort of the bottom line is that you have a deep appreciation and love for even the dirtiest of pigeons on the subway. Like we can recognize the God grace in those. But I think even more than that, I think you're right that it becomes about, you know, about behavior and how we show up in the smallest ways and in the biggest ways. Right. It's of course it's, you know, the big things like how we treat one another and we're not nasty to each other and we call our friends and we're nice to our neighbors and we talk to our family, et cetera, but it's also in those small moments, in those little exchanges, those matter. Those really make a difference.
They make up a life.
And when we say mm-hmm. one day at a time, what we really mean is one moment at a time.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right. And so that's what I think it is. It's like, it's just showing up in those moments with as much love as we can muster.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we have it available to us at all times, right? We can choose love or we can choose fear in every moment.
Right.
But
absolutely.
If we can choose love in those small moments, whether it's meeting someone at a stage door or you feeling where you're at and saying, how can I love myself in this moment and say, can I just show up and have fun tonight? Right. Rather than being the perfectionism, right? Because that's a fear response rather than a love response.
Yeah.
Can I show up with love for myself? You know, obviously getting yourself or allowing something bigger than yourself to move you from the bottom of the bottom of the barrel to Broadway. You know, letting that journey unfold as it is.
Yeah.
To stepping in front of a baby kicking a pigeon.
Yeah. 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 Turn towards the light, right? Let's choose not to suffer anymore.
Let's choose not to suffer anymore.
Right. On the big things and in the small things, right? You know, let's choose let me turn the other way. And feel that warmth of the sun. When I, one of the defining moments is the morning that I kind of stopped.
Mm.
My partner, Ellis, at the time, I'd come home at 2 a.m. and he said, what are you going to do? And I was like, I want to stay with you. And he huffed and left to go to work. And I was like, okay. And I remember, not unlike this moment right now, is I was almost on my side of the bed and the sun was coming in the window and I could feel the sun on my face, the right side of my face. And I was like, it's over. It's over. Whatever I was just going through, this warmth of this sun that I was feeling, I now know it's over. And I cried. And I was very scared, but I knew it was over. So when I feel that, when the cat or the dog gets in a good spot in the sun.
Oh, yeah.
That's what it reminds me of all the time.
It's you were ready for that. You're ready for the sunlight. And I want to emphasize that it is scary, because it's the devil you know, right?
Right.
Like it's easier to stay with the thing that we know. It's easier to do the predictable thing where I know the beginning and the middle and the end.
Mm-hmm.
Much scarier to walk into, one could say the darkness, but it is really the light, which is just it is pure openness. There is no
unknown.
It is full unknown.
Right,
is scary.
Right, right. And you know, it's scary at any level of it. You know, it's scary if you've been out there for 30 years. It's scary for me being out in the darkness for about 4 or 5 years. You know, it doesn't have to, it takes what it takes to get out of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It takes what it takes to get out of it and, or to get to choose a new way. But it's in that moment where mustering the courage and the strength to choose another way, just to choose not to suffer anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's really profound, and help will come rushing in because it's waiting for you to choose that.
Yeah,
it's waiting. Yeah.
This has been such a blessing, James. and I will say, I mean, obviously this goes without saying, but you are fantastic in the show, which is just to say that God is working through you. In Chicago, it really is a love fest in that room right now, in that theater. It is really it is something else. I have not had a theatrical experience like that in a long time, where it is just everybody's just psyched to be there, and there is nobody phoning it in. No one in that ensemble. Everybody is working.
Right. Right. Right.
Serving and working, and it's really fun to watch. It's fun to get to watch that unfold, and especially as a theater person, to witness theater people having fun doing the thing is,
I know what
is,
you mean.
You know what I mean. Like it's so
exactly
it's so delicious. Yeah. Like it's so fun to be like, ooh, yeah, they ate it. So good. So good.
Right.
So I'm so glad that you're enjoying it, and I'm so excited that you're writing too, that you're doing, that you've got, you are working on your own thing and you're actively creating in the art of creating and the act of creation. Because I think that's, especially as artists, that's like our nature. There's, I don't know if you know Elizabeth Gilbert. She's another author. She wrote like Eat, Pray, Love. She wrote Big Magic. Oh. And she is another recovery person. And she has this great quote that if we're not actively creating something, then we are actively destroying something. And let me tell you, that is very true for me. I have to be in the act building. Of creation. Yeah, yeah, building. Yes. Otherwise, yes. I am tearing it down. And I don't want that. And this has been to be here in this moment with you has been such a blessing, because it's always nice to connect with people and talk about this kind of stuff.
Yeah, on a lot of levels. We're talking about it on a lot of levels. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's food. It's nourishment.
That's the perfect way to put it. It is nourishment. Yep. So yep. I appreciate you. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.